I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away. It's time yet again for our weekly visit to the barbershop where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel. He's with us from Chicago. In New York City, we have Pablo Torre. He's a senior writer with ESPN. Neil Minkoff is a healthcare consultant and contributor to National Review magazine. He joins us from Boston. And on the West Coast, Gustavo Arellano. He joins us. He writes the syndicated Ask a Mexican column, and he joins us from Irvine, California. So, Jimmy, take it away.
Thanks, Celeste. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
What's up?
What's going on, man?
All right, all right. Well, let's get it on. Uh-oh. All right. Well, former congressman and now New York City mayoral candidate Anthony Weiner, he's kind of the gift that keeps on giving. You know, Celeste, he kind of reminds me, you know what? It's like we all have a brand new pair of roller skates, and he's got a brand new key that he wants to show us all. And despite his 2000 election resignation for sexting, he just can't keep his finger off the send button. What's up with that, Celeste?
Yeah, the details keep coming out. But during a campaign visit to a Brooklyn soup kitchen, Weiner was asked how many women he had been in touch with online. And here's a little snippet of that Q&A.
How many women were there? Can you remember?
There are a few. I don't have a specific number for you. It's not dozens and dozens. It is 6 to 10, I suppose, but I can't tell you absolutely what someone else is going to consider inappropriate or not.
Ay, caramba!
Less Carlos than any, but greater than
Carlos de Rosa in la casa! I love that dude,
oh,
man.
Boy.
Thanks, Celeste. So, Weiner says he's not stepping out of the race, and he says New Yorkers care more about their future than his pants. I mean, his past. Pablo, this is your city. What do you think?
Look, I kind of agree with him in that I don't think New Yorkers really do care so much about the moralizing element of it. I think it's really funny. I think we love the fact that the Daily News and the Post are coming out with these all-time great back covers. But honestly, it's what it says about the man, right? I mean, like, I don't really care what his personal life is like, to be perfectly honest. Insofar as he violates the pact he made with his wife, that's certainly a problem. But really, it's what it says about a guy who can't control himself and is defying the advice of everybody around him. I worry about what this guy is like with his finger over the figurative red button. What's his decision-making process like if he can't control himself in a way that is flabbergasting, just absolutely insane that he would keep doing this. So it's clinical, or it's very deep-seated, characteristic worrying that I have about him.
Dr. Neil, Weiner's numbers have they were hard at one point, but they've suddenly gone limp in the polls. Should he stick with it?
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I agree. I think that this should become – I have two quick points. One is I think that this is going to serve as a very interesting referendum on just how much we care about somebody's personal life and their indiscretions. But I have to say that, you know, Pablo said the word clinical, and I actually went on the website and I read the text and I read the narrative, and I have to say that I don't think this is a sex thing. I think this is a insecurity thing. I think this is a neurosis thing. This is about finding affirmation and finding your worth in other people responding to you. And that's why there are all those really sad texts about, you know, am I
You're
pathetic? Do you think I'm a bad person? I actually think that this is such a deep-seated neurosis, insecurity kind of thing that it actually made me sad.
You know, I look at this, and I kind of admire his chutzpah. I mean, post-Clinton, let's be honest, post-Lewinsky Clinton, there's really no compelling reason for politicians to run and hide after scandals of this type. You know, as a matter of fact, I think it even worked for candidates because it kind of suggests that, you know, they're like the rest of us. I mean, well, some of the rest of us. I mean, not me, of course, but, you know, some of the rest of us. Gustavo,
Yeah, I agree. Complete show of insecurity. Do you really want a politician who's insecure? Absolutely not. You want a guy who's confident of everything that he does, come hell or high water, whether you agree with it or not. Sexting, that's so teenager. I mean, this guy, as far as I know, he hasn't admitted to any actual infidelity on his wife, just sexting, in terms of actual sexual relationships. This shows me that this guy has a fetish. This guy that can't even complete the deal. Do New Yorkers really want somebody like that who can't even finish the damn thing? No, I don't think so at all.
Hey, bro. I mean, I think Prince and Sheila E. said it best. We all got a love bizarre, bro. I mean, so before we move on, Wiener was using the name Carlos Danger online. It sounds like a character from Johnny Bravo. I'm not sure if he came up with that one on his own or he used the name of his first pet or the street he grew up on. Neil, you got an online alias of any kind, Dr. Danger?
I actually do. My online alias is Pseudo Nim.
I personally go by Jimmy Israel online.
Gustavo.
Well, that explains what
I love about the name Carlos Danger, it shows how Mexicanizing the United States is turning into. We're becoming more and more Mexican. Really, Carlos? That's awesome.
Well, but just FYI, my online pseudonym is Sweet Sweetback. Shout out to the Van Peebles. So like,
I'm
going
to jump in here before this goes any further, Jimmy. You are listening to our weekly barbershop roundtable. We are joined by culture critic Jimmy Israel, healthcare consultant Neil Minkoff, syndicated columnist Gustavo Arellano, and sports writer Pablo Torre. Back to you, Jimmy.
And I thank you. All right. Well, I had hoped that we'd be done talking about the George Zimmerman case, but another juror from his trial has come forward. Celeste, we got some tape. Yep.
Yeah, we do. This juror, who identified herself as Maddie, was the only woman of color on the all-female jury. She is Puerto Rican. She's a mother of eight. And here's just a portion of what she said to ABC News.
George Zimmerman got away with murder. But you can't get away from God. And at the end of the day, he's going to have a lot of questions and answers he has to deal with. The law couldn't prove it, but, the world goes in circles.
Yes, we do, Maddie. And we thank you. And we thank you, Celeste. You know, she also said that she has trouble sleeping and eating because she feels she was, quote, forcefully included in Trayvon Martin's death. Oh, that's too bad. Listen, I am so sick of these jurors coming forward. I do not know what motivates them beyond some microwavable single-serving brand of catharsis. Also, a book deal, maybe? In my opinion, jurors should let the verdict do the talking. That's just me. Gustavo, what stood out for you among juror 529's comments?
This woman obviously never saw 12 Angry Men. If she really did believe that Zimmerman was guilty of murder or second degree murder or whatever, it's her job as a juror, once she sees the facts, to be able to stand by that. Whether that means a hung jury, okay, it's a hung jury. So it always upsets me that after the fact, these jurors say, oh yeah, we really think Zimmerman did this, this, and that, but we had to follow the intent of the law or however the law was written. Too much, too little, too late. And frankly, when now she's accusing Zimmerman of murder, for me, it almost sounds like another libel case Zimmerman could have against this person, in addition to, who was it, NBC News or whoever chopped up his
tape. It
was
ABC. And ABC. She's juror B29 as opposed to 529, which is like the college savings plan.
Yeah, but it's all too much, too little, too late. It's really annoying.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that, Gustavo and Celeste. Interestingly enough, just days after Zimmerman was acquitted, he got a Superman on. And he and another man helped a family get out of an overturned car. Interesting. Family said they were grateful, but they backed out of press conferences to talk about it because they didn't want any kind of publicity. Nick Minkoff, is that unfair? Should Zimmerman get to, start over and, cape up and save the rest of the world?
It's not so much that I think it's unfair that he gets to cape up, as much as there, a couple things. One, I don't know anybody who read that news who didn't immediately roll their eyes and go, really? Did that really happen? And I started thinking about Morpheus saying that I do not believe in coincidence.
Oh, God.
But also,
Nerd.
I have to say, I am so tired of the celebrity culture that I don't want this man to become a celebrity. I don't want him to eventually be somebody that TMZ is following around and know what he had to eat and what he's tweeting about. That the best thing you can say about this person is that a bunch of really bad things happened around him leading to somebody's death. And that shouldn't be the kind of thing that we celebritize.
So Pablo Torre, it sounds like he thinks Zimmerman is going to become like Latino or Hispanic OJ.
Well, to quote another line from The Matrix, that, Mr. Minkoff, is the sound of inevitability. This is going to be...
All right, I'm going to call it...
It's going to be Circus Forever. It's the Matrix and absurd, references. But yes, I just had to say that.
Nice. All right. Is that it? Is that all you got on it, bro?
I can keep going, but I think we got a limited amount of time.
All right, well, check this out, man. Let's keep it moving. The Speaker of the House, you know, is asking Steve King, a Republican from Iowa, to stop speaking so much. Celeste, what's up with that?
Well, King has yet again made some controversial comments, this time about undocumented immigrants. Just this past week, he said he was speaking to Newsmax. He was talking about what people call dreamers. Those are the immigrants who are brought to the U.S. illegally as children. Here's a bit of it.
For everyone who's a valedictorian, there's another 100 out there that they weigh 130 pounds and they've got calves the size of cantaloupes because they're hauling 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert.
Steve Holy King mackerel. There explaining that allowing citizenship for some undocumented immigrants might also mean allowing citizenship for a whole lot of criminals.
Wow. Thanks for that, Celeste. Him and Don Young should go on the road. Wow. That guy.
And Carlos Anyways. Danger.
Yeah, Carlos Danger in su casa. All right. Gustavo, you want a piece of this, man?
Oh, man. You could have a whole soliloquy on this. But this is what I'll point out. He's talking about dreamers. He's saying dreamers are 130 pounds. By definition, dreamers are kids who came to this country as infants or usually smaller than or younger than 10 years old. They're barely going to be weighing 75 pounds. That's for starters. And if you just see his stats, for every one valedictorian, that's 100. So that means 99% of all these dreamers are ruthless criminals or people who are exploited by the narco cartels. That's absolutely false. Really, no one should pay attention to King because this is a guy who has a history of making very inane remarks. I think it's just a reflection of whatever district in Iowa he's in that they keep electing this fool again and again and again. And I was going to say a word in Spanish, but I can't say it.
Don't,
bro. Yeah, don't do that. We're in enough trouble as it is, right?
Exactly.
Neil Minkoff, you know, Speaker Boehner, he called the comments deeply offensive and wrong. Is this kind of a just, you know, news dispatch from the Church of the Obvious, or does he have a point?
So it couldn't be. So I find these things to just be incredibly upsetting because you it derails an important conversation. So you have somebody out there grandstanding, showing off, talking to, you know, trying to throw some red meat to the base and going too far and saying things that are just ridiculous and inane and completely indefensible. And it paints an entire side of the aisle as being just racist and wrong, and I find it incredibly frustrating. And I'm not frustrated with the process. I'm frustrated with the speaker, not the Speaker of the House, but the King who actually said these things.
I just to add, I mean, one of the things that I find most pernicious from people who are in elected office is this presentation of things that sound empirical but are really just the same old, really dangerous stereotypes. And honestly, that's how these things really start and get perpetuated decade over decade, is these same people making stuff up. And, you know, if he has numbers on that, feel free to present them, but don't just traffic in the same dangerous stuff that has really, honestly, stigmatized an entire group of people.
Well, since you talked about numbers, let's move on here really quickly because we want to talk about Major League Baseball. Milwaukee Brewers outfielder Ryan Braun has been suspended for the season. He violated Major League Baseball's drug policy, and there are a lot of reports and certainly a lot of rumors that New York Yankee Alex Rodriguez could be next. So, Pablo Torre, let me go to you. Obviously, some people are saying A-Rod should get a lifetime ban. What is going on here?
Yeah, I don't know if a lifetime ban is what I would personally suggest. I think a lot of this, to be honest, I mean, this has been going on for a while. These guys aren't more guilty of anything that we believe Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa to have done. The difference now is that the commissioner of baseball, Bud Selig, actually cares. And my suspicion as a cynical baseball fan is that he cares because he sees his legacy being written as the guy who didn't care about steroids.
Huh.
So that's not to you know, say that Ryan Braun isn't a total jerk and Alex Rodriguez isn't a total jerk and he didn't do all these things, but I wonder that they're being made examples of to fulfill a larger, more selfish mission on the part of Major League Baseball, which from a due process perspective would have to be troubling.
Right. But Neil, let me bring this to you. You love baseball. Some people say, look, it's ubiquitous. Just allow it. What do you think?
Yeah, so that's something I think that we struggle with, but I am a firm believer that it's better to have a standard and have a hard time living up to it, but mm-hmm. to know that the standard is there and that's the right thing and that's the right way to do it. And if people fail to live up to that standard because of temptation and incentive, then that's a failing rather than an acceptance. Because if we say, okay, it's fine, and we're going to allow steroid use in the Tour de France and Major League Baseball and football, how far down does that go? Would we condone college athletes? Would we condone high school athletes trying to get a college scholarship? Mm-hmm. Should I start writing growth hormone prescriptions for my 11-year-old? Like, at what point do we say that it can't be tolerated if we start to open the door? And that worries me.
Well, Gustavo, what do you think? I mean, it's certainly telling that a lot of these scandals in terms of doping have to do with sports that rely on individual performance, right? As opposed to team performance like hockey.
This is what's happened. Because Major League Baseball didn't nip it at the bud about, what, at this point, 15 years ago, if not more so, there's such fatigue now among fans of Major League Baseball and other sports that it's almost to the point where you have the majority of fans saying, you know what, just let them take steroids. These are men, these are adult men who know what they're doing to their bodies. They're trying to enhance their performance so they could, you know, they could win their contracts and they could please the rest of us. Why not allow them? And I think it's a dangerous example to allow steroid use with major league athletes, because then you do get high schoolers and people even younger than in high school starting to take them, and that's going to wreck their bodies. But that's all that is going to be C-League's legacy. C-League's legacy is, you know, long ball powered by steroids and, you know, getting almost all the big stars of that era, from Maguire and Sosa nowadays, to Braun and Rodriguez. Yeah. And these are just the people that we know. Now, imagine all the people that we don't know.
Mm. Okay, we'll have to leave it there for the week. You just heard Gustavo Arellano. He writes a syndicated column, Ask a Mexican. He joined us from Irvine, California. Pablo Torre joined us from our bureau in New York, senior writer for ESPN. Joining us from NPR member station WGBH in Boston, Neil Minkoff. He's a healthcare consultant and contributor to National Review magazine. And Jimmy Israel, of course, writer and culture critic. He's also adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. He joined us from NPR member station WBEZ in Chicago. Guys, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Take care, everybody.
If you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz from your radio, you can look for the podcast. It's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. And that is our program for today and the week. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Tune in for more talk on Monday.